Hi guys. First, I just want to say this is Kalina.
And this is Sayla.
And we are so happy that you're interested in our podcast and have decided to start on episode one. This is us from the future saying awesome. Heads up on the sound quality. They get better over time. We learn a lot of things. This very first episode is recorded in my kitchen on a cell phone sitting next to an open window. Not great.
With two girls who had no fucking idea what they were doing. So we're super excited that you're interested and that you guys are starting at number one. But we still welcome you to jump around and see what other books it is that you have read.
Exactly. Or if the sound quality is too hard and bothering you, listen to what we sound like now.
Yes.
This is future us. We have professional recording equipment. Mm-hmm. So that's all we ask. Bear with the sound and it does get better. We also just figure ourselves out a lot more and understand how podcasts work.
Yeah. I mean,
and what we should talk about.
If you want two friends that just keep talking about what it is that they're very uncomfortable talking about, that's us. And we're actually better people for it now. We're closer now.
So much better.
And thank you for joining us, and we hope you guys enjoy us.
Bye.
Bye.
Shh. We're reading dirty books. That's right, everybody. Don't let your mama into the room. Don't let your little sister in here. You just sit down, get ready for Kalina and Saylet. They're reading dirty books. Shh. We're reading dirty books.
So hello, this is Shh, we're reading Dirty Books.
Mm-hmm.
It's a brand new podcast about supernatural romance novels.
A little dirty.
Mm-hmm. A little sexy.
Mm-hmm.
A little behind the scenes.
Yes.
I'm Kalina.
And I'm Saylet.
And
those aren't fake names. Those are real names.
Those
are real names.
Given to us at birth.
Yes.
Even though they're both crazy. And I've never met another one of either of us.
Yes. And yours is not spelled the way that I feel like it should be spelled.
And yours is
definitely isn't.
Yours has like seven extra letters.
It does. And even my parents didn't know how to spell it.
No,
again.
They just put that K on for fun.
Well, and they switched the E to an A later on in my life.
Yeah.
So I had to.
Where did we end up on that? Is it an A or an E?
Well,
it's technically an A, but everybody uses an E.
It's an A because that's how my dad registered me in school.
Ah, but we all spell it with an E.
Well, that's because
that's the traditional way.
Yeah, and I always like to just put Let for everything. So that's also something you can call me as Let.
Yeah.
So
not on this podcast.
Yeah.
Because that one's hard.
Well, and especially now because I can't hear if you're calling me Let. We're
just going to call you straight Let. Oh, it's going to be difficult.
I also answered to Cells.
Cells, that's true.
Something
Celery else. Occasionally, if our friend Emily is talking to you.
If it's Emily, then it's Celery.
Oh, Ems, when you listen to this.
She's good. I could already hear her saying, fuck you guys.
Fuck you. She wouldn't even say that. Okay. So, for our very first inaugural podcast, we listened to, because we did, we both used audiobooks for this one, The Darkest Night by Gina Showalter. It's the first book in the Lords of the Underworld series.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's what? I think it came out in 2008?
Yes, 2008.
So, it's been out for almost 10 years, and we're getting around to talking about it. 2017.
Yeah, well, we just figured out how to use a voice recorder, so we're
just entering the tail end of the podcast boom, so this will be good.
Yes.
All right, well, how do we start? Should we talk about the just general plot of the book?
I think one of our focuses is just to really show that this topic, sex in general, should be something that can be open.
Yeah.
And that women can freely talk about.
Absolutely.
And, you know, these kind of books you shouldn't be really ashamed, because
I don't know about you, Kalina, but for me, when I listened to this book the first time, I was like, oh my God, I feel like I should be listening to this in a closet somewhere, and nobody should know that I'm actually listening to it.
I know exactly what you mean. I mean, if you'll remember, because it's my Audible yes. account. It's my Audible account. And when I very first shared it with you, I told you, okay, here's all of my books. I have like 250 audiobooks because yes. I'm like obsessed. And I listen to audiobooks all day at work. But I did tell you when I first shared it with you, I was like, there are some dirty books on there and you do not get to judge me for having them. So obviously it is a thing that mm-hmm. I felt defensive of, even though you're like my best friend and I shouldn't have to be like, hey, don't listen to my dirty books and think I'm a dirty person. Yes. But I'm not. I mean, that's just, I think too often women fall into that mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. that role. They kind of feel that way about their own sexuality and, yeah. and topics like this seem taboo. So even though romance novels are one of the, you know, top selling books in the country and I think around the world, I don't have any statistics on that. I'm just making that shit up. Obviously they're being written and they're being bought and they're being read. What? People are reading them
continually written,
but
and bought.
No one talks about them.
Right
You don't talk about them with your girlfriend, you don't talk about them with your mother, you don't talk about them with your sisters.
Right.
It's just something like you almost don't even share them.
Right.
Like, I know a whole bunch of women. I work in an office full of women that constantly exchange books, and none of them are romances. They're all just, you know, like crime or thriller or suspense novels, and they are just sharing around the office, but you never see a romance come into the office, and I don't believe it's because none of them are reading them.
Right.
I think that it's just, you're embarrassed.
Yeah.
So we're going to try
yeah.
to combat sure. that.
And Kalina and I, just so you guys know, we have known each other for 20 years.
Yeah.
About almost.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, no, really.
We're 20 years.
We're like 14 when we
yeah,
met.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. She taught me how to swim. And, I mean, we met freshmen in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So when she did tell me about these books on her audio, on her Audible, as soon as she did say it, I don't know if my face lit up or not, but I was just like, well, fuck yeah, I'm listening to those. I just don't know if I said that out loud. Did I say that out
no,
loud?
No, I don't think so.
No, so I was just like, huh, okay, maybe I just browse through and listen to, yeah. And yes, that was one of the first ones I listened to. And then I listened to the rest of them that you had on there. And that was it.
Yep.
That was it.
Yep.
We've never kissed, we don't kiss and tell.
No.
We've never had that, been that intimate, I think, within our relationships. I think the only thing that we've really shared was little stuff.
Like high school slumber party talk,
yeah.
you know, like
yeah.
truth or dare talk or
mm-hmm.
I've never, we did that a couple times
yes.
in high school. So,
yeah.
but nothing, okay, that was 20 years ago.
That was.
So obviously, I think there's a few more things that we have gone through in our lives. I mean, you're married and you have kids.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, stuff has changed since the last time we really
yeah.
probably talked about anything like this, but
yeah,
it's time.
It is time.
It's time.
It's
to share.
And I think that if there are women out there that actually do have conversations like this with their girlfriends, I mean, I think that's empowering and,
mm-hmm.
and you know, we're hoping to be able to just
yeah
get that point across that, hey, we
yeah.
can talk about it too.
Be a place where you can come and know that, I mean, I think we all know that these books are not, you know, you're not the only one ever reading them.
Right.
But it's going to be interesting to see if this idea that we have works out, if people really do respond to it, and there are women out there, even men. Hey,
mm-hmm.
these books could absolutely be for men.
Absolutely.
There's no reason they couldn't. Right. I actually have an entire part of this book that I'm pretty sure was written for men. Because I was just like, this does not make sense to me. But yeah, so just, you know, give you a place to come and hear people talk about
yep.
these topics, read these books along with us,
mm-hmm.
kind of, you know, at the end of the day, we want to just talk about, like, did we like them? Is it good? Is this a good,
mm-hmm.
you know, indicative of the genre? And then there's also going to be some topics, you know, coming out of, I happen to, you know, be a pretty big feminist. So there's times where these books strike some of those,
mm-hmm.
like, up against some of those values of mine where I just, like, cringe.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to kind of unbox some of those
yes.
things and delve into those ideas, like, can I still be a good feminist and occasionally love to listen to the damsel in distress get
yeah.
saved by the big burly man.
Sure.
And how do I square those within myself? Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, too often those can kind of rub against each other. So.
Sure, yeah. Well, I also think it depends on how people perceive it, too.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, you know, absolutely. I'm a feminist, but I still like the raunch. I still like the sex. I still like, oh, yeah, you know, all of that
and
stuff.
And all okay. of that perfectly good with mm-hmm. feminism. Sometimes some of the themes in these books can be,
yeah,
you know, women needing to be saved, which can be a little bit difficult mm-hmm. to, mm-hmm. especially this first one.
I think especially for
we got this a we got a toughie right off the
we
bat.
We did.
Because well, I have some yeah. issues with Ashlyn.
Well, she's a virgin for once. Like, that's virgin. The number one thing.
She is 24. She's a, which is fine. I'm not virgin shaming.
Right, right.
But this is a sexy novel.
Right. And that is the, what, the ultimate fantasy besides like a threesome and like.
But that's a male fantasy. Right, that's exactly. not a female fantasy. I don't right. think. I mean, and well, that's, it could be. I just thought it was an interesting choice because this is a series of books and, you know, we have in honesty, in truth, we have read further. We've read at least three or four.
How many? Yeah.
I think yeah. I have four.
Before you got, yeah.
But just stop. Getting, yeah. Because I realized I was going down a hole that I was listening to him at work, which turns out is not an ideal situation.
It is not. It's not a good
My
idea.
My male boss walked in one day, and I just like was looking at him hearing one of the sex scenes, and I went, I gotta stop this.
I accidentally...
This is not appropriate.
I accidentally pulled the headphones out of mine once, and my office mate, I don't know if she heard anything, because as soon as I pulled out, I was like, oh, shit, okay, yep, get it back in, and then... And then I think I never listened to it again at work, but...
Yeah. I mean, the vast majority of the book is not about sex.
That's right, but it always...
There's, like, three scenes.
Right, exactly. But it always happens.
It always happens then. When it's like, at I was, that point. Just earlier, I was refreshing some of the parts in while I was cooking. And so I had it on. I don't use headphones while I'm cooking because I would strangle myself and turn all my pots over. And... My male roommate walked in, and I was like, it was in a particularly dirty sex scene, and I like flew across the kitchen to try and hit the thing because I was like, he doesn't need to hear
oh,
about that particular moment in time. That's
awesome.
So yeah, so even though you know, here we are, we're trying to get like over some of this embarrassment, over some of this like shyness regarding these books and topics, but even so,
yep.
There is a taboo, and you know, you don't necessarily want to broadcast to the world that you are listening to them.
Right. Exactly.
So, let's get into the book. If anyone, you know, just a quick synopsis of the Lords of the Underworld, just real brief. These men were ancient, or not ancient, but they were warriors of the gods back in ancient Greek times during, you know, the rule of Zeus and so forth. They were apparently given tasks of... you know, guarding things and fighting for the Greeks. And one of them was given the task of guarding this box, this very famous box full of demons. They call it Dimuniac. They use that word a lot. I don't know if that has any historical realism or if it's a made-up word. I didn't look it up. But anyway, that the task of guarding it was given to Pandora. She was one of the warriors along with all of these men. And they were jealous. They didn't like that she had the task of guarding the box. They thought box... They thought that that was a slight against them, so they decided to steal it, prove their worth somehow by letting the demons out. Seems like a flawed plan.
Yeah.
In the end, didn't work out for them. So they did that. They let the demons out. The box was lost, and now every single warrior was given a demon to house within them. So we meet six of them from the beginning. Maddox, who houses violence. Torin, who houses disease. Lucian, who houses death, Reyes, who houses pain, and Aaron, who houses promiscuity, and Aaron houses wrath, and Paris houses promiscuity. So they're living in Budapest. They've kind of, you know, it's modern times. They're each struggling with their demons, trying to just get by. And then, one day, a girl stumbles up the hill to their fortress, and her name is Ashlyn.
Yes. These demons are known of. They just, the people that live around the castle and live around the area know that there are a group of men that live up this hill. They just don't know really what they are. They don't know if they're angels, they don't know if they're devils, they don't know what they are.
They're just, like, aloof. One of them, Paris, who has promiscuity, who has to, you know, have sex a lot. They know him because he's the only one that interacts
that can
with
go,
them.
Really go into town and to but, go to town.
Yeah, goes to town. So a lot of the women of Buda have encountered him and have stories of him. But the rest of them just know these lords as, you know, these aloof men who live up on the hill. Apparently they are very good for the city. Most mm-hmm. people think so. At least most mm-hmm. people in Buda think they are good for the city. They keep crime rates down. They mm-hmm. donate a lot of money to charities. I mean, it's very evident from the early on that she's painting the picture of, you know, struggling. They have this evil within them, but they're struggling to be better than just their demons.
Right.
There's a lot of conflict. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the demons overtake them and they have control. But for the most part, these are good guys who are mm-hmm. struggling
with their demons.
Literally, their demons.
Literal.
It's very literal.
And there are other groups out there and organizations that actually are out hunting them and looking for them.
Yes.
So this is how Ashlyn came about?
So, as far as Ashlyn is concerned, she also has a gift, a supernatural mm-hmm. gift. She can hear conversations that have happened wherever she is. So if she stands in a room, she will hear all the conversations from the past that have occurred in that room. And as a child, she was given to an institute by her parents, an institute for paranormal psychology or something along that lines. I could be getting the word wrong. And so she uses this gift to help them seek out and study, as far as she's concerned, seek out and study paranormal beings, mm-hmm. you know, learn about them, help them if they need help. And if not, if they're a danger to humans, only then do they step in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, spoiler alert, that is not what the Institute's really about. The Institute is secretly this group known as the Hunters. Mm-hmm. Well, it's both. It's kind of both the Institute and a certain branch of them is the Hunters. Mm-hmm. And the Hunters have been chasing down the demons or the lords of the underworld since ancient Greece.
Yes.
Since this all happened and they've released the demons into Pandora, there has been this group of humans who have been trying to hunt them. At first, they tried to kill them. They did successfully kill one of the lords back in ancient Greece. His name was Badin. And they chopped his head off, and his demon roamed free. So now they have this problem. They mm-hmm. want to get rid of the lords, but if they kill them, their demons are free on Earth now.
Yes.
So they're working on a scheme to try and find the box. And if they find the box, they can suck the demons out of the lords. The demons go back in the box. The lords die. And as far as the Institute is concerned, or the Hunters are concerned, humans will now be peaceful, and there will be no war or violence mm-hmm. or death. Or pain, or wrath, or disease. And, you know, at that point, you start looking at these humans like, you're full of shit.
Yeah.
Because you're taking away all of human agency at that mm-hmm. point, if you really think that it's only these presence demons of these demons on Earth.
Yeah.
Which, you know, but there's people like that in the real world, in but the not real world. Just this book.
Yep. So we come across Ashlyn in the woods near the castle. Maddox is the demon of violence.
Yeah.
And naturally, he's like, what the fuck are you doing here? I'm going to kill you if you don't tell me what's up. And I don't remember how, because this was the beginning of the book, I have since forgotten the beginning of the book.
No, it's easy to do that. So he went out there. There were four men following Ashlyn. She was stumbling up the hill on her own. We hear, the interesting part of this book, or interesting thing in this book is sometimes some of the chapters are written from Ashlyn's point of view, some of them are from Maddox's, some of them are from entirely the other character point of views. We switch around a lot. So it's never just one omniscient narrator telling us, or just one character's voice. It's a lot of voices. So Ashlyn's just trying to get there because while she was in Buda, she overheard old conversations that led her to believe that they could help her. Uh-huh. She wants to get rid of her
voices.
She wants someone to help teach her how to control her gift because it's very hard for her. Imagine if you had to listen to every conversation that ever, like through history, we're mm-hmm. talking
everywhere
thousands and thousands of years. It sounds impossible, but it sounds really crazy mm-hmm. actually. So she's trying to get up to the top of the hill for help. Apparently she's being followed by four men and Maddox goes out and kills them because they have the symbol of the Hunters. Because another really smart thing that groups that are hunting immortal beings tend to do is they tag themselves. So they're easily identifiable as the enemy. That's a theme that's in a lot of books. But I joke. It's funny. So they all have the symbol of infinity, which means they're hunters. So he kills them because why not? You know, they got guns. They're trying to kill him.
Right.
They're not good guys. And then he finds her and for some inexplicable reason, as soon as they see each other, sparks fly.
What?
The world goes silent. Ashlyn doesn't hear voices anymore.
Nothing.
Maddox makes the voices go away. they touch, sparks fly. Mm-hmm. Literally, throughout this book, every time these two characters touch, they are talking about static, about heat, about, you know, charges flying, yes. blood heating. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is like physical, instantaneous contact mm-hmm. drives these two mad. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, nice. Beyond, even against his better judgment, Maddox carries Ashlyn up the hill and into the castle. The whole time, he's like, I shouldn't do this. Because he thinks she's bait. Now, an other curse of Maddox's, because what happened right after the box was, you know, lost and the demons were released, he, in a fit of violence, taken over completely by his demon, kills Pandora. He stabs her 6 times in the stomach and kills her. Even though, you know, they're immortal, apparently you can still kill someone occasionally. So as an additional punishment, he has been cursed to die every night in the same method as Pandora, as mm-hmm. he killed Pandora. And so his friend
Reyes
comes. He's Pain. Reyes is Pain. So he has to come and stab Maddox 6 times in the stomach at midnight. And then Lucien carries his soul and violences, you know, the demon down to hell. And they spend the evening in hell. They're unclear about the timing, but I guess at sunrise or something, they get to come back from
yeah.
hell. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, he gets to go back in his body. His body's healed. He's not dead anymore.
But so, he suffers this every single night. Every night. This same time.
We're talking like 5,000 years yes. at this point. Mm-hmm. It is extreme.
Yeah.
That's a significant punishment.
And it isn't, I mean, like, he's feeling the pain. So here's where my insensitivity is coming through, right?
Okay.
And this is just a little bit later as, you know, the inevitability of Maddox and Ashlyn falling in love. She's like, don't fucking kill my man. I love him. That's fucked up. Why are you guys killing him? In my brain, while I'm listening to this, I'm thinking, well, you know, just let him die because you're going to see him the next day. I mean, like, I get it because he's going through a lot of pain, but it's like, walk away. Let him do what he has to do because he has to do it. There's mm-hmm. there's no way around it.
Well,
he's being cursed.
And even at that point, she has all of these other ideas. Like, she's going to go and do these things. And mm-hmm. he's not letting her out of his sight at this yes. point, right?
He's a little obsessive. Oh, he's like, a little lot obsessive.
Controlling yes. is an understatement for what Maddox is. But she's got all of these thoughts. Every time we hear something from her point of view, she's like, I'm going to, you know, help them. I'm going to listen for the box or, like, conversations about the box. I'm going to help mm-hmm. them find it. Because now they find out that the hunters are trying to find the box with the goal of sucking the demons out and killing them. Mm-hmm. Now, despite the fact that they've all lived for 5,000 plus years, they apparently want to keep on living. Who knew? What? I would not. I would be like, let's do that. And I could get, you know, to not be alive anymore. But that's my own view on immortality. It's not a thing I like. It's just
unnatural.
Who wants to live forever? Sounds terrible. Also, they've lived forever with demons apart from society.
Yes.
They have not had good lives.
Yes.
They should all be on board for not living anymore.
I would agree with that.
But anyway, they all want to continue to live.
From the point.
So they're afraid of the hunters finding the box, sucking the demons out, and killing them. Mm-hmm. So they want to find the box to either destroy it or hide it somewhere and prevent the hunters from ever having it. Mm-hmm. Whatever. That's the end goal. So she's going to try to help them by finding the box, by listening. But he won't ever let her listen, and she can't listen when she's around him. So she's got all these ideas for what she's going to do every time he dies. But she still freaks out every time he dies.
Yes, every time he dies.
Which he only dies like 3 times.
But that's just how I always viewed that point, and I don't know. Yeah. As Ashlyn was a little bit annoying to me in the sense of her...
Because when she is with Maddox, most of the time she's very weak. Now, part of it is she's physically been weakened like 3 different times throughout
that's
this
true.
Book. Mm-hmm. So the very first night, she is... Like, it's winter in Budapest, and she... apparently didn't even have, like, a coat, and she's struggling up a mountain. It sounds very challenging, and she's not very good at it. So she's tired, and she's cold, and she, like, sprains her ankle, and then they lock her up in a dungeon because they have to go kill Maddox. They kill Maddox. She freaks out and is crying and trying to, like, beat up these 6 guys that are, as far as the book is describes them, like Adonis, you know, like
yes.
giant mammoth muscle
yes.
Adonises, mm-hmm. and she's, like, trying to prevent them from hurting Maddox, which doesn't go over so well. But he dies, and so they lock her up in a dungeon. So she spends the whole night in the cold, in the damp, not sleeping, not eating. So she's kind of sick by the time he finds her then. And then she gets sick right again. Mm-hmm. Because he feeds her wine that he shouldn't.
That was only, like, made for the
It's
the
made
lords.
For them. Like, they put ambrosia in their mm-hmm. wine because they're immortal, so they, you know, regular wine doesn't do any good. Mm-hmm. So she gets sick again, spends like half the day in bed throwing up, and he has to save her. Well, Danica saves her. That's a whole other story.
Yes.
There's a lot of side stories.
Which is a good preface for the upcoming stories that are coming. So
exactly.
The way that Gina wrote this was pretty good.
It's real genius. Because it like, each book isn't just a completely new from scratch. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, and now we're going to introduce you to a completely new character. We've already met three women in this book who then make, you know, show
have
up in the next
stories
books, have their own stories with their own lords.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they're, you know, she's intertwining characters throughout this as opposed to just, like, here's this two that we're going to focus on.
Right.
But they do. They end up, you know, after she gets sick, she gets better, you know, she takes some aspirin.
Yeah. I like that, too, by the way, that he's, like, I mean, I understand that he's, like, 5,000 years old.
I know.
But he's, like, she's like dying from, you know,
poison
and
or like
stab wounds and stuff like that, and he's like, I'll give you some Tylenol.
Oh, later when she gets stabbed, he's like, give her Tylenol.
Give her Tylenol. She's gonna get better.
He does not understand medicine.
Yeah,
is what we learn.
And I see, this is where the jackass in me comes, because I'm like, okay, really,
all right.
But I mean, I understand, and I think the way that Gina described the characters is real good, and the way that they were portrayed and their actions and the things that they said really does show what type of character they are.
Because they do speak in, like, I don't think Maddox ever uses contractions, which is very, would be some, like, kind of typical someone who is old, who's not necessarily up on current lingo and speaks multiple languages.
Sure.
So he speaks without contractions. He's constantly using, you know, whole words. It still seems, I mean, some of them, each character has more knowledge. Paris, who interacts on a more daily basis with women, with human women in real non-supernatural beings, he knows much more about them. Torin, who's online, is very tech savvy. He knows how to set up the computers and the cameras and the, you know, all of that, whereas Maddox apparently doesn't do anything but lift weights. I mean, we really do not know a lot about how he spends his days prior to Ashlyn arriving, but when she arrives, he spends his days taking care of her in bed, because she is always sick.
She's always sick. There's always something wrong with her.
She is sick for the whole book. It's very challenging to get on board with that. But that does make, that makes her kind of a frustrating character, in my eyes, just because of how weak she is. But there are definitely scenes where she stands up and takes back her agency, despite the fact that she's basically been kidnapped.
Yep.
Even though she was going there of her own accord, she's now been locked up multiple times. They locked her in a dungeon, they locked her in a room, they locked her with the other ladies. I mean, she's constantly being put behind locked doors, told where to go and what to do. She does stand up to Maddox in their very first intimate encounter. Like, he keeps giving her, you know, orders and telling her, like, strip, take your clothes off, do this. And she's like, no, I'm not going to do that. You should ask nicely.
Yes.
And so then he asks nicely and she does all the things. She
pretty much says, say please. Okay.
And then I will do it.
Now my pants are off.
But she did teach it. She did tell him that. Now, that first encounter is where I had some of the first notes that I really wanted to get to about Ashlyn. So we learn that Ashlyn is a virgin. You know, it's not, I mean, she has a pretty good excuse for it. People don't like her very much. She didn't have a normal upbringing. She was given away. Her parents gave her away at like
five
to an institute because they couldn't stand her crying about the voices.
Mm-hmm.
So she definitely was not raised normally. She was raised, at, you know, by scientists, basically. And understandable. Men are, you know, put off by the fact that you could secretly overhear all the conversations that they have, not with you. That's going to put a damper, I think, on a lot of relationships, I can understand.
That, and she can hear the conversations of them having, you know, with other men saying...
Saying the things that guys say.
Saying the things that she doesn't want to hear about herself, being exactly what we just said she was. So
Yeah. So, you know, she talks about this a lot in her inner monologue. You know, she's very self-conscious. She's very insecure. She has some serious emotional, like, self-esteem issues that come up in that first encounter, which is actually, I think, a lot of women. It's just interesting that this, for an opening of a series, we're going to start here. We're going to start with the virgin who is kind of meek and doesn't know what she wants. So in their first encounter, when Maddox pulls his pants down and she gets to see his penis for the first time, she has this inner monologue where she goes, well, I've seen the male penis before in textbooks and, you know, on websites I shouldn't have looked at,
uh-huh,
and videos I shouldn't have watched.
Right.
And that is where I got real sad for Ashlyn, because she wasn't, like, it's one thing if you're raised by a really, strict family who does instill values, mm-hmm, of, like, it is bad to look at porn. Mm-hmm. It is bad to go online and, you know, look at this stuff. And then you don't really, I mean, that's how you're going to feel about it, because you were told that from a young age. But we're supposed to think of Ashlyn as having probably just never been told about any of it.
Right.
So why is she instantly ashamed?
Right.
Like, she's 24, too. She's not 16. Right. She's not 18. She is a grown woman.
Mm-hmm.
And she is in her own head about to have sex for the first time thinking, I shouldn't have already seen a penis.
I shouldn't have already
seen it. And I'm like, you're 24. You should have seen a penis. Like, that's, yes, just the thing. Like, could you imagine not having seen a penis, mm-hmm, and then seeing Maddox's penis for the first time?
Sure.
The way, yeah, they describe it, that would have been terrifying. Actually, I'm pretty sure it would have been terrifying, yeah, anyway.
Well, there's a part in the later on in the book where she actually grabs a hold of it and she can't even wrap her hand around it. Like,
I know. I sat there and I went, freaking huge.
I'm like, hold on. My fingers don't even go around my wrist. And I'm like, no, I don't know if I could take it. I mean.
No, this virgin's getting torn apart.
I mean,
I had the same thought. I was like, we all, you know, size is great and all, sure, but there is a limit. And yeah, when she said she couldn't wrap her hand around it, I went.
Well, and that was definitely really scary too, because I'm thinking, huh. Descriptions on, you know, the actual scenes and stuff where it's like thrust and harder and deeper and stuff. I'm like, all I can think about is my wrist, because I'm like, my, you know, fingers might be a little bit shorter than normal, but my wrist is not, I mean, okay.
You know, I mean, your wrist is normal size. It doesn't look like extra small.
No, but it is a huge penis.
Like, it would be a giant penis.
My wrist is a huge giant penis.
Be a scary penis.
And as a virgin, I mean, but
holy shit.
So here's another thing too. She also doesn't really, you know, she doesn't know what to expect for sex.
No.
So size, okay, yeah, it's huge and whatever. So she doesn't know the difference between large and, you know,
oh, yeah,
smaller or regular or average or whatever. So for her, it's just what she knows. She has no idea what it is to have sex with a normal penis. And now,
no,
if Maddox should die, and she goes and finds a new mate,
she's gonna be
sorry. I'm sorry, Ashlyn. You will be disappointed for the rest of your life.
That is so true. Because I do remember back to my first time with the person who I was with, thinking, this is the biggest penis I've ever seen in my life. And I have since learned that was probably not that big a penis. I found bigger ones, is what I'm saying. And so, for this to be her first, I just was very concerned for,
yes,
her.
Yeah.
But to come back to it, I just was, it, you know, throughout the book, she's talking about all of these, she's read sexy novels, she's read romance novels, she even went out and got herself some sexy lingerie, mm-hmm, and costumes, mm-hmm, even though she doesn't have anyone. She's always wanted a man in her life, she's wanted to have a real, yeah, relationship. She needs intimacy in a relationship, because, mm-hmm, she didn't even really have parents.
Right.
You know, McIntosh, this doctor from the Institute's the closest thing she ever had to, mm-hmm, parents, and he doesn't sound all that great. So it's normal, like, I understand her desire for,
oh, yeah,
like, just someone to love her and, mm-hmm, someone to be intimate with, and that's all great, but she constantly is doubting that she should even know about these things,
right,
that she should even have seen these things, mm-hmm, and I'm like, oh honey, I'm so happy you've at least seen it, because otherwise this is going to be rough.
Yep, that's a tough, really good point, and that's some of the things that we're actually, you know, doing that for, because here, I mean, I guess it depends on where you get your videos from or your information or anything from, but it's a natural
it's a natural one. It's a natural thing for us to explore.
And desire is just human.
Yeah, exactly. If you watch porn, fine. You know, as long as it's not the wrong kind of porn, because there is wrong.
Well,
there
is wrong type. There's of, like pain, like that hurts people.
Sure.
It's
yeah.
Child you know, porn. That's there's bad.
Yeah, don't that do kind that. Of stuff. But if it's you know the stuff that just it's just for you internally and it just however whatever floats your boat type of thing, within reason, then it should be okay for you to explore that, and you shouldn't have to be ashamed with it. This was written in 2008, though, like we said earlier, that was 10 years ago. I think 10 years ago it would have been harder for me to admit that I watched porn.
Oh, for
that,
sure.
You know what I mean? So I think the time we are a sure. little late on
I
that.
I mean, 10 years ago, we were Ashlyn's age.
Exactly.
And there's no way.
Wow, we were.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Oh,
that is really weird. 10 years ago, yeah. we were Ashlyn's age. And yeah, no, I wouldn't have been able to have this conversation.
No, even with you. Even with you.
Even with you.
And we would have known each other for 10 years at already. That point already. And I mean, at that point, I think the only thing we ever shared was how many sexual partners we've ever had.
Yeah.
That was about it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I mean, even till this moment, like, I honestly wouldn't care because I have been told I don't have, you know, I have no stop. So I have a really good way of making people feel uncomfortable. And that's not because I want to make you feel uncomfortable. It's because I don't have a problem sharing. Mm-hmm. So if you and I ever got into that conversation, I think we'd be okay.
I think so.
Anytime. Although, you know, I mean, Dan and I have been married for 12, 13 years. I'm looking at you like you should know.
I
Why
was
don't
not
you
invited
know?
To the wedding. It's a very sore topic we don't talk about.
Oh, yes. Yes, I know. I'm so sorry, everybody. That is a different podcast, and I apologize for it. So for me, my past 13 years of experience is
yeah.
all the same, which is not bad. Daniel, no. if you're listening, I love you to
oh,
bits.
Oh, Dan.
You were the best guy in my world.
And okay, he loves these books.
Yeah. He does.
He told me.
Does. And I will tell you why. Oh, and maybe you can tell why. Because not only was this good just for me to listen, because I like listening to this kind of stuff, and I have a very vivid imagination, while I was thinking of Beauty and the Beast the whole time, because I live in a cartoon
oh,
in
yeah.
my
sure.
brain.
Why not?
Stockholm Syndrome and all of that stuff. This was really good for my sex life. The first time I listened to it. And the second time I listened to it. So,
I do know that because Dan thanked me personally.
Yes. And there were parts that I had him listen to that we were just like, whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. You know?
He was, so, yeah. He was like, thank you for yeah. those books. And I was like, you are welcome. Let's not talk about this again.
Right. Which is not something that we should be ashamed to say
no, we
anymore.
Shouldn't. No, we
so,
shouldn't.
So,
You and I can talk about your sex life. I don't need to talk about your sex life with your husband.
That is true.
That's the
okay. That's where we draw the line. That's very true.
That's just that's a
yes.
step that it's like I
Maybe
like Dan
we'll
and he's a friend.
Never get to that step.
But I don't need that.
That's hilarious.
He doesn't need to. He can share that with Ryan.
Yes, and boys do kiss and tell, so that's
oh,
fine.
Yeah.
They
oh,
can do
all,
that all on their own.
All like
but that's
that.
Actually something that, I mean, for anybody out there listening, if you're, not even that if you're bored, but if you just want to feel something different or explore something different, even think of something different when you are being intimate. Mm-hmm. This is a great book to start with.
Oh,
to,
yeah.
To read and to dive into and just, you know, use your imagination with it. And the way that I see the characters is not even how she describes them, because my whole time I was thinking that Ashlyn was a redhead. And she is not.
No.
She's got a honey-colored hair.
She's all honey. That's her number one descriptor
yes.
is she smells like honey, she tastes like honey, she
yes.
has honey-colored hair, honey-colored eyes, honey skin dipped in cream.
She's all honey.
It's
and
all
I'm
honey.
Thinking like...
It's very bananaan.
Ginger.
Ginger.
That's all I'm thinking is ginger. I'm thinking
yeah.
just a like, beautiful redhead. That's all mm-hmm. I think. Which is, you know,
There's
whatever.
One that comes later. There's a redhead... In
yes.
a future one of the Lord's
mm-hmm.
ladies.
I think she was probably the last one we listened to.
I think so. I can't remember.
I can't either. But
we'll
it's
get there.
On the way.
We'll get there. Yeah. No, I mean, even as someone who not married, doesn't have a significant other different times that I have listened to these books, they are mm-hmm. good ways to get yourself going or,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
just if you're in a rut and you don't really feel sexy or think... Or just aren't thinking about it because you're busy. Like, I work so much. I have two jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I do all this extra stuff. It's really hard. It's easy to just let that part of your life Absolutely. Fall away and into the wayside, and you just don't take care of it at mm-hmm. all, and you just ignore yep. it. This is a good way to, like, kind of bring that back and go, you listen to this book and go, oh, I am a little horny.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's not a bad thing.
Not a bad
because
thing.
Because it's good for you to release those hormones every Absolutely. Once in a while. Yeah. Get that flood of, like, happy hormone that mm-hmm. comes with mm-hmm. orgasms and stuff. So,
Absolutely. Anyway. Absolutely. Anyway,
so that was, yeah. Chapter 11 is that particular part that we're talking about, the shower scene. That's when Maddox finds out she's a virgin and decides not to yes. take her.
So that was a little frustrating for me for the first time that I listened to the book, because I'm like, what the okay, I don't care. But then he's old-fashioned, I get it. But then I was like, okay.
He didn't have very good reason.
No.
His only thought was she had just been sick.
Right.
Well, turns out she's always sick. She's always. You should probably just fuck her.
Always. Give her some Tylenol. And then fuck her.
Hey, sex is really good for pain.
And you know what? She was asking for it. She wanted it.
She wanted sex.
Like, what the fuck are you doing, dude?
No, that's okay.
Yeah. But I will have you forever.
I will have you forever. Yeah. That's another thing we should talk about, is the voice. So this book, if you listen to the audiobook of this, it's voiced by Max Belmore.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually think, for the most part, like, I really like what he did voice-wise.
Yes.
His women's voices were a little bit not great, but I think that's pretty standard. It's hard
to do women's. I think it's harder, too.
For men to do women's voices and not sound dumb. Like, sure. I think their go-to woman's voice is dumb sometimes.
It's the high-pitched, like, airy type of...
Ashlyn was pretty good for the most part. There mm-hmm. were moments. One thing, and it's not his fault, it's the writer's, is she particularly likes to describe Ashlyn's sounds.
Yes.
Ashlyn is always gasping.
Uh-huh.
She's moaning. She's yelping.
Squeaking.
Squeaking. And she literally makes every sound under the sun. Mm-hmm. And especially during sex scenes, which I find a little bit off-putting. I guess that's a personal choice. I do not feel that gasping at everything that happens to you is necessary. But again, I'm trying to give her slack because she is a virgin.
That is true.
At one point, she dangles off a building. So, you know, she gets her action on. She is not always a damsel in distress. Actually, we should kind of get to the end. So, like, all this shit happens. The lords concoct this plan. They're going to try to kill all the hunters in town. And when they go to town, they actually run into this other group of lords.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently back in Greece, at one point, when the hunters killed Badin, it caused a schism because a group of the lords wanted to hunt all the hunters down and their families and everybody they knew and just destroy the town, like burn it to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And this other group was like, we can't give in to our demons that much. We have to go find peace. So it's the six that we first meet. They go off into Budapest and live there for the next thousands of years. Then the other group of six continue to fight with the hunters for thousands and thousands of years. Mm-hmm. So they run into each other in a nightclub in Buda. And then it turns out it's a trap.
Mm-hmm.
The hunters blow it up
mm-hmm.
because, you know, I know they don't want to kill any of the lords, but let's blow them all up. Just fingers crossed nobody dies.
Right.
And then they use that as a distraction to try to get into the castle and get Ashlyn out. Apparently she has a tracker. She has a GPS tracker. Mm-hmm. She thinks is birth control, which is a real big fuck you. Like, I got real angry at that moment because by the time she finds out that her birth control is not birth control, she's already had sex
yep.
with an immortal guy who holds a demon in him. That is some information you need to know.
I actually, to tell you the truth, I totally missed that part. Okay. I totally missed that part. It must have been either really small or I was...
It got briefly discussed at one point. He feels the lump in her arm. Maddox feels the lump in her okay. and Ashlyn's arm and asks her what it is. And she says it's birth control because apparently one of the institute workers was raped by a goblin at some point and had a demon, like, not a demon, but like a half goblin, half human baby that was really horrible.
Okay.
So they told her that okay. they were giving all the women birth control implants.
Oh, right.
In order to prevent half-goblin babies.
Okay, okay.
So she bought it, hook, line, and sinker, because she is naive.
And well, she doesn't know. Yeah, she's naive.
She's real naive. So she has sex with Maddox, and like they have real sex, full sex, finally. Anyway, this is after he dies the second time. But then later in the book, McIntosh tells her that it is not
birth control.
It's actually a GPS implant, and they knew she was going to go up to the hill, and they were using it to keep tabs on her.
Oh.
So they're assholes. And she's just had unprotected sex with an ancient man who also counts as a demon.
Yes.
I feel...
Okay, yeah, that's totally fucked up.
Yeah, but still, as women, right. You know if you're on birth control or not. That's all I got to say about that.
Yes.
If you choose not to be, that's fine. That's your choice. But somebody fucking faking your birth control is a real big issue in my world.
Yes.
Like, you need to just know whether you're safe or not.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, and she finds out later that she actually was bait. Like, she literally was bait.
Yes. That's what she
finally
finds.
Tells her.
So, yeah. So they sneak into the castle. They grab her. They almost kill Torrin, which is a fucking stupid idea. Torrin's disease. And so they all get sick.
Yep.
And they escape with her. They take all of the other women. We haven't really touched on them. Side note, we didn't even talk about that shit. Okay. The Greek gods were just overthrown by the Titans. So yes. Apparently the Titans have been locked up in Tartarus for centuries, millennia. The Greeks were ruling in the heavens, and then the Titans get out. They get out of Tartarus. We don't know any of this yet. Just very brief. They got out. They kill the Greeks. So the Titans are now the gods in control. Mm-hmm. They are in control of the lords. The lords have been used to being ignored by the Greek gods for millennia.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden the Titans call them up and start giving them shit to do.
Yes.
They tell Wrath, Aaron, who holds Wrath, that he's got to murder these four women.
Yep.
He can use Wrath to judge whether or not somebody is guilty and deserving of death, and he finds that these four women are not. So he's a little bit perplexed. He does not want to murder four women. Murdering women is like the last thing for these men.
Yeah.
That is the reason Maddox is cursed every night, because he killed Pandora. It's the only woman any of them have ever killed that we know of. And he stabbed her to death, and now he has to die every night because he killed not only another warrior, but he killed a woman. And that is like, you do not kill women. And so the fact that Aaron has to kill these four innocent women is really eating the group apart. They're trying really hard to find a solution, so they kidnap them. Because that's a solution. Let's kidnap them and bring them to the castle.
That is always the solution. But that is also an introductory to...
Yes, we need to meet Danica.
We do need to meet Danica.
There's already stirrings. Reyes, you know, the guy who hoses pain, is going crazy. He has a thing for Danica, but he is fighting it, and it is evident throughout this whole book.
Yes.
She even has a thing back for him.
Yeah.
But she is a little bit more feisty. She is not an Ashlyn type.
She is not an Ashlyn type.
A more stand-up-for-yourself type.
Yes. And she is the Hauser of Tylenol.
She is the Hauser of Tylenol. She knows where the Tylenol lives. So they all get kidnapped by the Institute, or the Hunters. They're one and the same, as we find out. All the Hunters get sick with disease because they touch Torrin, who is the Hauser of disease. Real big thing. He caused the plague. You know.
Yep.
Bad things. During her kidnapping, Ashlyn talks to McIntosh, figures out that she really was bait. She's real upset. She's super sad. She also talks to a goddess named Anya.
Anya.
We get to meet Anya for the first time. She becomes big in the next book.
Yes, she does.
And she starts giving, or trying to lead Ashlyn to the ideas of what she needs to do to break Maddox's curse. Because Ashlyn wants to find a way to break his death curse.
Right.
And so she starts, you know, discussing fairy tale tropes. And what do you always have to do in a fairy tale to break a curse? And so Ashlyn starts thinking of what she's going to need to do, i.e. life for a life.
Right.
Okay. So...
And Anya is really the one that starts to give the lords the idea about the Titans and has more information about the Titans. So she is a key character.
We are not 100% sure yet. She says she's not a full goddess.
Right.
Her mom was a goddess. We don't know exactly what that makes her. It's a demigoddess.
Yes.
But, you know, in terms of power, she has some. She can show up incorporeally and talk to people. And anywhere she wants. She's not restricted by place. She has some power over time, we find out later. And she, but she says that her power is tied to choices. Like everyone has to make their own choices first, and then she can help you. Yep. So that's why she needs to talk Anya into making the choice to sacrifice herself for Maddox in order to break the death curse.
Ashlyn. You said Anya.
Yep. Ashlyn. So doesn't help that their names are both A's, but yes. So they kill all the, well, all the hunters die because of disease. All of the lords now get together. The six new guys move into the castle.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of on a...
They have to try to get along because now they're working together for the same purpose. They're working together.
They need to find the box.
Yes.
And then...
And they're start, they're slowly starting to mentize.
Yeah.
They're finding that they need each other.
They, yeah, they had always been friends. They just split because one of them, you know, some of them wanted to continue fighting and the others needed to find peace.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they're going to, you know, work together. And Ashlyn decides to sacrifice herself for Maddox.
Mm-hmm.
She gets stabbed in the guts. He flips the fuck out. Yes. That is an interesting scene.
Yeah. Well, he's tied to chains.
He is pissed off. He's chained to his bed because he thinks he's about to die. They chain him up every night when they kill him.
Yep.
And instead they stand there and stab her against the wall.
Yep.
And with a giant sword. That is terrifying. Like, I know you're doing it for your love, but, oh, I do not want to be stabbed in the stomach six times. That's horrifying.
I mean, like pain. That's, yeah, yeah, that's true love.
That's true love.
True love. True but she, love. I mean, she and Anya obviously had talked about something.
Yeah,
and figured something out.
I do get the feeling, though, that she does not think she's coming back from it. That she has to feel like this is a full sacrifice.
Okay.
But she knows that if she does it, Maddox will be free.
Right.
And it's only once she's done it that Anya talks to Maddox.
Right.
And he has to promise to do something for her in the future.
Yes. That whatever issue she's going to have with the Titans.
Yeah. They're hunting
her. She's
going to
need their help. Right.
So she says, at some point, I'm going to come to you guys.
You
and you're
going to
help me.
No questions asked.
And they all say yes. Lucien, Reyes, and Maddox.
Yes.
Technically, Maddox's curse is also Lucien and Reyes'
yes.
curse. Because mm-hmm. they have to be with him at yep. midnight every night to kill him.
Yep.
And so they don't have free lives either.
Mm-hmm.
So they all agree. Anya rewinds time. And Ashlyn is alive. And the curse is broken. So they never have to stab him to death again.
Yeah.
I mean, they could if they want to. But
sure. You know. That would be kind of fucked up.
We didn't even touch on the funniest piece. Okay. For some reason, the fact that the guys all have their demons is indicated on their bodies by butterfly tattoos.
Yes! They do. Okay. These strong, beautiful, burly, muscular, sexy men.
Hunks.
They, I mean, like, these guys are beautiful. They are the epitome of every woman's dream. Well, not every woman, just, I guess, of just...
They're at least held up as ideals.
Sure. Well, the ideals for the type of women that would listen to these books.
Yes.
I mean, like, you know, you and I obviously are... I like nerds, but...
Oh, yeah.
That's just me.
I have a string of nerds in my past.
Dan is the biggest
very
nerd I know.
Very few of them are strong, muscly.
Right.
Body workers or whatever.
But these lords are imprinted with butterfly tattoos. Now, granted, from the pictures that are shown on the you know the front of these novels, they look more like tribal.
Yeah, type they're tattoos. A little like not... Polynesian style.
Yes.
I would say the styling of the butterfly
mm-hmm.
is kind of that swirly, graphic. Geometric.
Yeah. Not so much as like, you know, pink and purple. No. Like a little princess butterfly.
Yeah.
But it's still kind of funny. And
it's a funny twist.
Know what that represents and what that means. Because even Ashlyn brought it up in the book. She's like, you know.
I don't know. And I don't know if Gina is going to explain it at any
yeah.
point in a future novel or if it's something she does in a back
right.
story.
Right.
It just, each one of them has one.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the lords have bunches of tattoos. Like, Aaron is described as having just been covered,
yep.
you know, head to toe in
mm-hmm.
tattoos and piercings.
Mm-hmm.
Gideon is covered in
mm-hmm.
tattoos. But they all have the butterfly. It's
yeah.
all in a different place.
Sure.
But they have it, and that is their demon, like, that is their demon mark.
Yes.
I just don't know why it's a butterfly.
Butterfly. If anybody finds out, please let us know.
Yes.
We
share that information.
We don't know. I mean, like... you know, even just looking at the cover of the book right now, I mean, I would not complain about a butterfly tattoo on that man. I mean, that's beautiful.
Oh, it's fucking hot.
It really is. It's just kind of...
It's just hot.
It's just...
It is an interesting concept, though. It is. It's not a... Like, sometimes when they're about to demon, like, get lose control, their demon shows on their face. Like, yes. It shows, like, you can see the skeletal demon mask on their face. That happens to Maddox a lot in this book. And that makes sense. Mm-hmm. The butterfly thing is just out of nowhere. But it does apparently, it, like, gets angry and pulses when he's near.
Yes.
Like apparently it changes color and, like, can look like an angry butterfly.
Yes. Which I guess I can see. Maybe it turns into a moth. I don't know.
Oh. Isn't interesting?
So here's another thing also that we didn't touch upon. And obviously we can't say the whole book.
The whole book.
But the lords hate their demons. They don't get along with them. They don't want to get along with them. And they fight constantly with their inner demon. Maddox has fallen in love with Ashlyn. And the demon has fallen in love with Ashlyn. So they're both, even though Maddox... And the demon fight, Maddox is like, no way, bitch, that's mine. She's totally mine, 100% mine. And the demon's like, it's ours. And he's like, fuck you, it's mine. But towards the end, they're like, oh, she's yours, but she's also mine. But she's mine. So they start to, obviously, they get along. Or they're more in one with each other versus fighting with each other.
It's a unique experience for Maddox. Because he says he's always been at odds with violence. Violence wants to hurt, and Maddox is trying hard not to.
Right.
I mean, he talks about having... This is the one piece that kind of got confusing for me. At one point, he's talking about his, like, what he thought kind of life he would have. He always had the vision of, like, getting married and having kids and carving things. He's apparently a really good woodworker. Mm-hmm. And he was going to carve things and have a wife and children. He was always an immortal warrior. And even, like, at another part of the book, he talks about even as an immortal warrior, he didn't have time for women. He didn't treat them kindly. He didn't think of them with, you know, he just would have uninspired couplings and, you know, impersonal couplings. He never really took the time to, like, love one, to love a woman. And so I'm a little bit at odds with how he lived that life, but also always thought he was going to get married and have kids.
Right.
But anyway, he always thought that.
That is a little confusing.
So he fights with violence all the time, but this is the one thing they agree on is Ashlyn.
Yes.
Ashlyn is theirs.
Yep.
They're both in love with her, even the demons. So she calms demons. Yep. But we're going to find out that all of the women do that in the books. That's
they
like
start,
that's a running theme is that... It's almost like there's a destined one for each one of them.
Yep.
And that's the woman who can calm the demon.
And it all happens in the same year. So they're all scoring at the same time. So
does it?
Just, I don't know. I'm just saying it conveniently. They're like, we've lived for 5,000 years.
But this one year.
2008 is the day we score. Or the year, you know. I'm just being facetious, but you know how it is.
No, that's, you know, it, I mean, obviously it does happen, bam, bam, bam. I don't think she's going to start writing in the future. Oh, it's very pot smelly right
it
now.
It is, yeah. Oh, just so you guys know, we are in good old Colorado, so.
Yeah.
That's common for us there now.
The whole state smells like pot.
The whole state. That one's very strong.
It's very strong. I think it's right outside.
Are they? They're probably listening to
they're
our podcast.
They're listening to talk about sex.
Our first... Listeners.
So, okay, so we pretty much wrapped up the book. That's the general plot. And I don't know, I think I talked on a lot of the things that I had thoughts on, mostly about, for, like, Ashlyn really is kind of a dual character, because there are definitely moments where she is just weak, and she lets Maddox do whatever he wants, and she kind of goes along for the ride. Yeah. But then every once in a while, she has an initiative that she really just takes back her agency. And it's always about Maddox. She's still always going to save Maddox. We're going to do this for Maddox. But she does do it. Like, and she owns it, and she doesn't let anyone tell her, you know, boss her around or tell her no, even though everyone, like, all Maddox says is no.
Right.
To her the whole time. So.
He tells her what to do all the time.
All the damn time, man. But, yeah, so I think it was a good, it's a good introduction to a series. And if I remember, I haven't listened to these in a long, long time, but if I remember correctly, we definitely start getting different stereotypes of women.
Yes.
Like, unfortunately, I do feel like they're still stereotypes. But that's part of books, too. You know?
And
like, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard. This is where, oh, I didn't, I was going to talk about the piece that I thought was, these are written by a woman. I think the vast majority of the target demographic is for women.
Sure.
But there are definitely points that come across as like, are you writing this for a man?
Right.
Because like Ashlyn's, in particular Ashlyn, being a virgin, being so inexperienced, gasping at everything, sighing at everything, moaning at everything. Like those are things that I feel like would make a man enjoy the story more.
Sure.
Like hearing her sigh, hearing her gasp when she looks at him, when he touches her, when she...
Sure.
Like, I don't know, maybe it's just me. Maybe it's just me. But those are the things that would instantly like pull me out of a story and I'd be like, why did she just gasp?
I guess another thing too, that I mean, maybe, and I obviously don't know Gina, but maybe it was just a way to humanize her, whether or not it was because she was a woman or whatever, because Maddox did some of that too. Obviously not as much as she did, you know. His nipples got hard a lot.
Right? They were really hard.
They got hard a ton, you know, and
his cock jumped a lot.
They jumped. I didn't know cocks can jump, but...
Apparently, we learned this in this book, they jump.
Look at this. Jump. My wrist just jumped. So, but I think it was just so that we can really get a little bit more, I don't know, maybe imagination or character in our brain. So, like, I imagined it. I was annoyed by it because, I mean, I guess when I see, you know, weird things and stuff, but I don't, on a normal basis, it's not a noise.
I don't spend a lot of time gasping.
I definitely don't do it.
During sex.
During sex. Not that it's not.
Like, gasping to me indicates surprise.
Yes.
And I guess maybe because she's a virgin, she's surprised by literally everything that is happening. So she's just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I actually, I liked every time the sex scenes were from Maddox's point of view, or the half of them that were, I liked them better.
Yes.
I liked hearing his inner monologue way more than I liked hearing her inner monologue. I think maybe because I have my own inner monologue. I don't need, I do not need you to give me another woman's inner monologue because it's just going to frustrate me because I get a lot of like, that's when my feminist kind of comes out because I'm just like, I do not like the things that she is saying in her own head because a lot of them are things about herself. Like she doesn't trust that he's going to think she's pretty. Mm-hmm. He doesn't, she doesn't want to ask for things she wants. I mean, she's so new to this. So I'm trying to give her a lot of like leeway. But even at one point, like after they had the shower scene where he went down on her orally, she was like embarrassed by it in her own head later. Yeah. She was just like, I shouldn't have liked that.
Yeah.
And it's like, just like it.
Yeah.
Or don't like it. If you don't like it, you don't like it.
You don't like it, you don't like it.
But if you like it, just like it. Yeah. Don't beat yourself up over this.
Yeah.
This is just not going to help you.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think, like, she's a little bit different towards the end. She's much more like
confident and
confident, they like run out of a meeting to go have sex, you know. And even I was just like, sex isn't that great. Right.
Oh man. Yeah, they do towards the end.
Yeah, they just like they just bail on all their friends to go have sex.
I want you now. I need you.
They
right
said
now.
That in a meeting. That was upsetting. I hated that part.
Like, you know, she's sitting on his lap, and every time she said something encouraging or courageous, he'd squeeze her ass. I'm like, no, let me fucking talk here. I'm trying to.
There's like literally we are in a one war, other woman man. In the world.
Yeah.
So let the fucking women speak. Do not always be grabbing them.
Don't grab my ass. But, you know.
I know that's the whole point of the book. That particular, that end scene where, they're like, there is a big powwow. All the men are sitting around. The other, like, cameo, the other. The only woman warrior is there, and Anne Ashlyn is there. They're the only two women in the room, and they're talking about, like, their strategy, how they're going to pursue the box, like, what they've learned from the gods, da-da-da-da. And that's all well and good, but literally, like, every time she speaks, Maddox, like, grabs her ass. He's proud of her, but I'm like, yeah, you don't need to do that.
You don't have to grab my
ass. Then, like, halfway through the meeting, they start having a private conversation about how they should be having sex instead, and then they leave in front of 11 other people.
They're making out... Vigorous
making out. 11 other people. All of them his immortal friends.
Maybe this is, you know, part of the topic that we're talking about. Well, hey, you shouldn't be afraid to do any of that, but...
You shouldn't be afraid to do that, but there's still public decency. It's not public decency. I'll tell you what it is. Okay. Because everybody, I think it's pretty good universal opinion is people don't like it when their friends get into new relationships and become different people.
True.
That's a pretty universal, like, everyone's had that happen. That's everyone's true. Had a really close friend who you hang out with. They get in a new relationship with a significant other, and all of a sudden, or this person you do not recognize.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So these guys have been living with Maddox for 5,000 fucking
As
years.
A violent right? person.
Angry, violent human mm-hmm. being. Now, I'm not saying he needs to stay that way, because it's actually better that he's not.
Sure.
And that she has tamed him, but he's now just fucking silly. And if I were those other dudes, I'd be like, what is happening?
Yeah, what is going on? Yeah, he actually smiles at the end of the book.
Oh, yeah.
Which is something that he would, like, couldn't do in the beginning at all.
I do, like, so that's my, it's not that, you know, that yeah. you can't make out in front of your friends. You can. But, you sure. know, if you're sitting around having an important discussion about everybody's future, then maybe the brand new couple in the room don't stop the meeting to make out and talk about how they should have sex instead, and then leave the room to have sex. Literally giggling, running through the castle.
Oh, yeah.
I think
yeah.
they said that.
No,
and
they
I
did.
Was like, that's like what he that's chased what he... her through the castle, yes. giggling. Mm-hmm. And I went, and actually, this is, we're going to come back to this in future books, because the Maddox in every book from here on out is 1,000 times different than the Maddox in this book. And that actually does bother me, because mm-hmm. I don't think people should change for relationships.
Right.
Like, I think it's one, unrealistic. You do not really change.
Right.
You maybe hide some pieces of yourself for long periods of time or whatever, but full changes are right. less common mm-hmm. and take time.
Yeah.
And they're implying from this that, you know, these two people find each other and all of a sudden this warrior is now freaking whipped little puppy.
Right, right. Because that demon is still inside him.
And yeah, violence is still
I mean,
in him.
Whether or not he is still, you know, now he's in love with Ashlyn and everything, that's calmed him down, but he is still the demon of violence. I can't yeah. imagine anything changing that.
I mean, it shouldn't, yeah.
Right.
I mean,
so
that still happens. Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, all of these books, there's never, all of them have their issues.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one issue that I do find. I also think, coming back to Ashlyn's virginity, it is, you know, it does happen. Some people find their first love and their only love, and that's mm-hmm. that's it for life. But I just am like, oh, she doesn't even know. Like, she might find a relationship that's way better than this mm-hmm. in the future, but... You know.
Right.
But so many of the signs are there from the very beginning.
Oh,
like every
yeah.
time they touch, it's electric.
Yeah.
Their blood heats for each other.
Yeah.
So you know that this is meant to be. It's fated.
Mm-hmm.
But still, it's like there are moments where I'm just like, oh, girl, you don't know.
And I think that's actually...
You need to grow.
This is, it's a good way that Gina has actually wrote it out also with... The next coming stories is the love scenes and the sex scenes and everything that she describes for these different characters. They're different. They're not all the same. Even with Maddox and Ashlyn, those three were different. The three that were in there, and there really were only three. Or
yeah.
you know, besides the teasing here and there and stuff like that. But the actual,
there were only
There was two, and then
three.
The tub.
There's the tub, which is not full sex, not intercourse,
but
oral sex.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And then there's next morning after the killing, they do it in bed like three times. We only get
That's
one
true.
Of them.
That's true. Yeah,
we
they
get
do
one
it
of
a
them.
Few times. That's
and then
right,
they
yeah.
do have sex right before she sacrifices herself for him.
That's right. Yeah. So you get the three major.
Three major. And they actually, they are really a good arc of a relationship. Because
yeah.
there's that first unexperienced, like inexperienced.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe I almost just said unexperienced. First, like, inexperienced touching where they're just kind of feeling each other out and figuring it's not even full sex. It's just kind of like, let's, you know,
mm-hmm.
like, get to know each other. And then there's sex and they go at it for, like,
yep.
you know, three times in one mm-hmm. day.
Boy. One right after the other. Oh, I know. That's another thing she's going to, I mean.
It's a lot of, I have a lot of feelings on that. I just get tired and hot.
Like, take a break.
My thighs hurt.
Okay.
I'm dry. And I'm just like,
no more explanation than
no more sex, please. And then
done.
The last one is very, like, soulmatey. Like,
yeah.
like they have the two, they do a couple different, you know,
mm-hmm.
I think she takes him orally for the first time.
Yeah.
And he, like, picks her up and puts her against the wall, like, eye to eye.
Yeah.
Because she's so much smaller than him that
yeah.
they don't really get to that in the other one. So,
yeah.
So there is, like, she does kind of tell the arc with
mm-hmm.
their three love intimate encounters, I'm going to say.
Yes.
Three intimate encounters.
Mm-hmm.
you know, kind of like complete that arc of what, you know, intimate love can be.
Yeah, yeah. And the way that she describes it is, I think, very well described, obviously. And she does do it different for each. I mean, not much more different, obviously. It's, you know, a throbbing penis.
Things are thrusting, you know, slipping. Things are hot and tight and wet.
Yeah, you know,
hard. That's there's a lot of discussion about hard, tight, wet things.
Yes, there is. She does say moist, which I think is hilarious because you hate that word.
I do hate moist.
But
I found a new word that I hated more in this, and now I cannot. Oh, lathe. Lathe. His tongue lathes her a lot, and I was like,
oh my god, you're right.
I do not like this word. Lathe. Lathe, not lathe.
Okay,
lathe is to turn a thing out like a wood, though. That's wrong. Lathe with a V.
Lathe. See, that word doesn't bother me.
Oh.
Well, neither does moist.
At one point, she was like, that first lathe of his tongue, and I went, bleh! And I threw up.
That's hilarious.
And I did not like that. And so I was like, let's not use that word in the future, but obviously that's a personal choice.
Oh my
I'd
god.
I'd rather have heard the word lick.
That is so funny.
Lick.
That's so
first
funny.
Lick of his, nope, I don't nope. like that either. Nope. Okay, we took a turn. I think one of our segments might honestly need to be words Kalina hates, because this book is chock full.
That's so funny, because I think there's only one word in the world that I hate, and that's oriental. I do not like that word.
That's understandable.
That's the only one.
Because you're not oriental.
All those other words that other Asians might find derogatory, I think, are hilarious. But
did you see... Oh, we'll talk about it later. Really side turn about the Asian band that won the rights to call themselves the Slants.
Oh, I didn't know about that. Now
so they wanted to name their band the Slants. They're all Asians. They wanted to name their band the Slants.
Are they American?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they went to trademark it for like their albums and stuff, and were told they couldn't because it's a derogatory word.
What?
And they took it to court and they won the right because they're like, look, we get to use it.
I totally get to use it.
So yeah, they, you know, I don't know. It's just an interesting case.
Now I'm going to look them up.
You should. You should look
that
up the Slants.
That is so awesome.
Side note, we're going to get back.
Oh my God.
All right. So overall, this was an entertaining book.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
If sexy.
You need something different, and if you need a little, I mean, if you need a different or more exciting or differently exciting sex life or different ideas, even just to get you going. I mean, that's something that
just hearing him describe some of those scenes is very just reading them, even if you don't do the audiobook. That's I do. We will in the future. We do want to get to where we read a physical book and kind of compare our experiencing that way, because I know because I read this book years and years ago, and then I downloaded the audio and listened to it, that they are two different experiences.
Yes.
It really is hearing it in someone else's voice versus hearing it in your internal monologue.
Yes.
Completely different experiences.
Yes, I agree.
And because this book was read by a man, I think that may be why I liked the male parts better. Like, I liked things from Maddox's perspective.
No.
I just liked his voice when he was telling me those, as opposed to his fake girl voice when he was telling me Ashlyn's problem issues.
Yeah.
But
And that's not his fault.
No, that is not. He's actually a good narrator.
That was a great narration. Yeah.
I think he did a really good job. He had enough different voices that you could kind of tell who was talking.
Yeah.
But it wasn't crazy.
Right.
You know? No, he was a good narrator. And I think he narrates the entire series, so... I do wonder about his job experience. Like, can you imagine being given this book and going into a sound booth and having to fucking read this and not giggle? We've giggled through this entire podcast.
I wonder that too. And, okay, and obviously we don't know him, Mr. Max.
Mr. Max.
But did he have the same experiences that we did as we were reading it and as we're talking into it now? I mean... Obviously, we got hot by it. We got wet by it. And it was an experience for us. And we enjoyed it. And we took care of ourselves and whatever, you know? I apologize in advance if this is inappropriate or not, but did you have a boner while you were reading it? You know what I mean? Just thinking about it. And even not even as Maddox, but envisioning how Ashlyn was and how she was described and how he was describing her. And, you know, leaving the tongue in all of it. You know?
I think that's interesting. But I'm sure, I mean, he doesn't have this job because he's not a professional. Right. So obviously he must have figured out a way to work around that.
It's the same thing they use in the movies. And I don't know
what
it is. That's
true, and I don't know what that is either. Because I would feel
blanket.
Or it's just acknowledging that that's just nature.
Right.
And it's nothing to be ashamed
of. That's
about.
True. Because we are giggling about it a lot. Because this one is our first one. And we are.
Oh, we're going to giggle through all of them.
We're going to. That's true. We're very good at giggling. But I think, and I don't know, I mean, maybe I'm speaking for you, but even at this point, there's still a little bit of, like, I'm a little still uncomfortable.
Oh.
Even just talking about it.
I am three glasses deep into wine. That's the only way this is happening.
You're only going to have Drunk Lena, which is great because Drunk Lena is fun. Not that, not Drunk Lena is not fun. She's great too.
I just needed to break down the walls a little bit.
Yes.
A little bit unrestrained. Yeah. No, it's challenging.
Yeah.
It, like the first time I was like, I'm about to say the word penis out loud. And I was like, I'm going to do this.
You were using penis. They say cock throughout this whole thing.
No, they say penis. Oh,
they do, but they do say cock.
They also say cock.
His
like
cock.
He says cock about himself, and I think she says penis.
Maybe she does.
In
say
her
penis.
Mind, they do say different. And I also realized that Maddox and Ashlyn almost never curse. I think the only curse words I remember were from Danica and some of the other lords.
She says freak.
Yeah, says freak or
she,
fuck.
I don't know if she says.
I never heard.
I think she said freak once,
twice. In her head.
Yeah.
She says like make love. And
oh, you mean like that? Okay, I thought you meant like in general. She didn't. They weren't cussing.
I don't think she did out loud either. No. But there are times where, like, you know, the very first time when he didn't fuck her, in her head, like afterwards, when she's like thinking about things, mm-hmm. she's just like, we're gonna make love next time all the way. And I'm just like, yeah, I'd have said fuck. In my own head.
No, yeah.
I would have, you know, because that's what you want.
We are fucking next time.
You want, look, we're fucking. But she used the term make love. Like, even when, or she did say have sex, I think. Are we really going to have sex?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I think that's part of her personality.
Sure.
That's the character that Gina developed for her. Mm-hmm. She wouldn't say fuck, even in her own head. Whereas, that's one of my favorite words, and I think it needs to be used.
It's one of my favorite words as well. It's one of my first words. Thank you, Myline. My uncle.
Who taught you to say
fuck.
It is a prerogative of non-parents to teach other people's children how to say curse words.
That is true. That's true. One of my sons. You fuck toys. You fuck toys. Imagine a 2-year-old saying that. Hey, brother, you fuck toys. In a very innocent...
Oh, yeah. No knowledge of what he's saying.
My brother goes, I know fuck toys. No, I know fuck toys. That's the best conversation I've ever heard.
That is great.
They don't say fuck anymore. And if they do, it's not around us. So.
Good. That's good.
All right. So I think we're wrapping this up.
We are. We're coming to the end. So that's our first ever... We're reading dirty books. Podcast, and we hope you join us again. Next time we're just going to continue with the series for now
because
it's what we have.
Yes.
And that way we can go ahead and tell you right now to read Darkest Kiss, book 2 of the Lord of the Underworld series.
By Gina Showalter?
Yes.
Awesome.
And then we'll go from there.
All right. Thank you.
See you next time.
See ya.
You've been listening to Reading Dirty Books with Galena and Saylet. Be sure to tune into the next episode. Get some more of your dirty books read to you. And if you're listening on a format that allows you to give a rating, please do that for them.
We'd like to thank Jim Townsend for that sexy music and amazing introduction.